Well, hello, fellow baseball nuts, and a big warm welcome to episode 6 of the Johnny and Josh Show. 6 for sexy, possibly not, but it certainly is a number that I always remember with great affection because, of course, Bobby Cox, Joe Torre, who were both number 6, retired as managers. And unfortunately, we're not 6. We're not even 4. We're 3. JC's with us. Eric's with us. Where's Big Dave, boys? What's happened to Dave?
No, Dave can't be with us right now. But he will be with us later on the show through the wonders of technology, through the wonders of Zoom. And no, I don't mean like a hologram, like Tupac or something like that. But Dave will be joining us later on. You'll see why.
I feel like that's a movie we could pitch, like the Paranormal Dave. You know, he comes in as an apparition, and you know how he affects all of us in our little podcast. I see Blockbuster.
See, JC, I just assumed that Dave was taking the social media blackout to extremes and just refusing to even communicate with us. We've obviously joined, and I'm glad we have. We're in unison with cricket, rugby, and of course football, amongst other sports, and we will be identifying and respecting the social media blackout. So if you do want to hear from us and you do get in touch, guys, please be aware we won't be responding before. I think it's Tuesday. Is that right, Eric? You're on top of this sort of thing.
Monday night,
Tuesday, we're allowed to.
Monday night, 11:59 p.m. British summertime.
Right. Okay. And I think we can all live without social media for a few days. I know, JC, you're just on Instagram and Snapchat.
I'm about the TikTok, you know. I just like to do my little videos.
Johnny's about the grinder, I guess.
I'm not your social media maven. Steady.
Okay, well, we're still going to do the show, which is great. We need to do a COVID update. And I've got a question for you on this front. Corbin Burns obviously had an amazing season. He's gone on the COVID IL. And I'm getting a bit confused about this because this is obviously different to the normal 10-day IL. I had Yordan Alvarez, who went on the COVID for the second time and yet reappeared within 2 days. So there's obviously not a time limit. Is there not a danger here, JC, that team managers, because there's such much secrecy about whether somebody's been exposed, whether somebody's actually tested positive, that perhaps teams might even abuse this to their own or manipulate the rules to their own advantage?
Yeah, I haven't seen the details of the protocols, but clearly it's not just whether or not you have COVID. There's a contact tracing element to it, which means that if you've come, you know, in some proximity to someone who has had COVID, that's all you need to say in order to set the wheels in motion. And whether or not you come in contact with them is probably something that's taken as an article of faith. You say it has happened, and so it's happened. So could it be manipulated? I suspect it could, because, you know, someone, if say you want to bring up someone from the minors, because when someone's on the COVID protocols and on that disabled list, you can bring up someone. So say, you know, you've had a pitcher who's just thrown, presumably you could say, oh, now he's come in contact with someone, a couple of days to sort that out, bring up another pitcher. So I guess it's possible, but you know, you hope that the ethics of the situation would prevent anyone from really trying that type of skullduggery. And we've seen, you know, cheating, if you get caught, you know, look at the Astros, right? You know, the consequences can be grim.
And talking of the Astros, we're going to be discussing that later in the show. Just before we get into that, just to round things up on a COVID front, what's happening north of the border? Any news from Canada for us, Eric?
Border still closed.
That's it.
Moving on.
Eric can't see his family.
Moving on. Okay. Well, trivia then. What have you got for us this week?
Well, this week is a special one because, you know, going off the, you know, bouncing off the Canadian border statement there I just made, Joey Votto, a player of good Canadian stock.
We love Joey.
He hit his 300th home run the other day, which is wonderful because he's, you know, because not just a Canadian, because he's a wonderful human being and a Cincinnati Reds legend. But his 300th home run ranks him only third all time for most home runs hit as a Cincinnati Reds player. So my question to you, gentlemen, is which of these players owns the record for most home runs hit as a Cincinnati Reds player? Is it A, Ken Griffey Jr.? Or is it B, Johnny Bench? Or is it C, Frank Robinson?
Ooh.
There you go. A lot of good players that came in and out of that organization. And but which one of those three holds the record for most career home runs in the Cincinnati Reds organization?
I would have thought
Tony Perez might have been one that you would have kind of tried to dangle in our face too. You know,
if there's a
big red machine, middle of the lineup.
there were quite a few I wanted to dangle in front of you, but I chose those three. That there's a rhyme and reason why. So, yeah, so.
And I have to say, it is interesting that you've mentioned Ken Griffey Jr. in that, because I don't know if you guys noticed before the social media blackout, I put up a question about people's 10 favorite players. And he was the one that I completely forgot. And he's definitively in my top 10. I absolutely love Ken Griffey Jr. And when you consider that he was sort of very much, you know, towards the end of his career during the whole steroid era, and yet squeaky clean, never went down that route, just the purest of swings. And very much when I started to fall in love with baseball, I've got such fond memories of Ken Griffey Jr. What a player he was.
Yeah. Moving on.
Okay, there we go. Well, leadoff batter of the day is, of course, now traditionally the news roundup, and we've got loads of great stories. I want to start with my personal favourite, boys, was watching the boy Rizzo, Anthony Rizzo for the Cubs, striking out my legendary mate, Freddie Freeman. It was a 10-0 rout. The Braves, it was all over. I think it was the bottom of the seventh. They threw a wicked curveball. But what I loved about it, JC, was what Freddie said afterwards. He said, "I couldn't stop laughing as I was going up to the plate. It's a recipe for disaster." And I imagine for superstar players like Freddie Freeman, when it clearly isn't being too serious, it does impact on your ability to swing and a hit. And the laughter, I mean, it was magical scenes.
It was a ton of fun. And I think what differentiated this from a lot of positional players coming into pitch is that you're bringing in a star to pitch. You know, normally it's your third string catcher who you're letting to go out there, your utility infielder. And in fact, when Anthony Rizzo left the field, Matt Duffy came in to pitch. And what also made this interesting was that Rizzo was going to have to face three batters under the new rules. He couldn't just come in and face a Freddie Freeman. He walked one, got another batter out. It made me think of a story that I know. On the final day of the 1952 season, Stan Musial was leading the National League in batting average, and the number two hitter in the race was a guy named Frankie Baumholtz. And by chance, the Cardinals, for which Musial played for, and Baumholtz's Cubs were playing each other. So in the first inning, Harvey Haddix is pitching, and he comes out of the game, goes out into the outfield. Musial comes in to face Baumholtz. So you have the number one hitter in the league and the number two hitter. The Associated Press said it was a bit of whimsy. Musial ended up walking Baumholtz, but Musial ended up winning the batting title. Those moments are really fun. You couldn't do that today, right, because it was only one batter. You couldn't get away with that. But I love stars coming in and doing that. I love the energy. It's just a really great story.
Yeah, and you know, the bit I loved, JC, was the fact that you mentioned he walked a guy. Well, he walked none other than Ronald Acuna Jr., who right now is ranked the number one player in baseball, fantasy player in baseball. And he came out with a great comment afterwards to the press, just saying, "Well, you don't mess around with a guy like him. You know, I had to pitch around him." But then he's pitching to Freddie Freeman, who, of course, was the NL MVP. But he also, when he saw Freddie earlier on, he apparently pointed at him and he was going, "I want you. I want you." So there was, the whole thing had been set up beautifully. And you could see the laughter and the joy. And I think when you have a rout, I mean, I think it was the Cubs manager that said sometimes, you know, when you've had a really bad day at the office, you just need to lighten the mood and just have a bit of a laugh. And I think that's great. That, to me, that's what sport should be about.
Well, you indicated why Rizzo was successful, which was that he had a curveball, because his fastball was 70 miles an hour. I threw harder on the mound than 70 miles an hour. I mean, that's a lollipop if ever there was a lollipop being handed over to a hitter. But that curveball was okay, you know? And it was lefty on lefty, right?
Yeah, well, he learned it in school, apparently, because they did ask afterwards. Okay, well, moving on. That's a great story. Not such a great story, but actually pretty horrific, was Bryce Harper taking one basically on the nozzle in the Phillies-Cards game. Genesis Cabrera was pitching, and his next pitch, he goes and hits Didi Gregorius in the ribs. Now, when I first saw the footage, I mean, I just thought, what on earth is going on? I mean, to hit somebody in the face, first of all, pretty awful. I mean, amazing he wasn't more injured. But to then go and drill a guy in the ribs afterwards. And yet it was pretty obvious it wasn't deliberate. And the kid was absolutely devastated. And from what I understand, Bryce Harper has acted in a really mature fashion about it. Tell us a bit more, Josh, on this story.
Yeah, so I watched the pitches. It was clearly a mechanical issue where he made a mistake. And it can be very hard on a pitcher. Thank God no one was injured in any sort of meaningful way. It can be incredibly hard. I always think back to the one baseball player who died on the field, a pitcher by the name of Carl Mays, who was a sidearm pitcher, hit quite a good player named Ray Chapman in the head. This is before they wore helmets. He crumbled to the ground, ended up passing away. And it affected Carl Mays' career for the rest of his life. Obviously horrific for Ray Chapman and his family. And Thankfully, this wasn't the same situation. Everyone was fine. But I really appreciate that Bryce Harper went up to Cabrera afterwards and said, "Yo, wipe this off. Keep on moving with your career. Don't start getting the yips. Don't internalize this. It was a mistake. You didn't do it purposely." And that speaks volumes to where Bryce Harper is now. You know, we remember early in his career, someone would ask him a question and he said, "That's a clown question, bro." And he was just so, you know, really this, the braggadocio and the swagger. And now that he's going up to younger players and trying to pat him on the back and help them move along with their career, speaks volumes to Bryce Harper. And I think that's a really good silver lining in what could have been a really awful situation.
You guys have obviously played the sport. Have you ever suffered anything similar? I mean, taking a, what was it, 97 mile per hour fastball, literally almost full on the face. I mean, pretty horrific to watch. It's amazing he wasn't more injured.
I once, in a championship game with the bases loaded, got hit in the head for a hit by pitch walk off win. So it was not as bad.
I was trying to
bop it into the goal for sure. Exactly. So I've definitely been hit in the head. You know, it's hard for hitters too, right? I mean, I've never broken a jaw. I've definitely, you know, hurt my arm before. We've discussed this before that if I got down to count against a pitcher who was better than me and they threw inside, I was going to take one. You know, if I was down 0-2, I would take it. So I got to the point where it didn't bother me to get hit by a 90 mile an hour fastball. But I can see if you break your jaw, you get hit in the face, it affects your career and it can end your career psychologically. So it's a big deal for everyone who's involved in those situations.
I took one in the nuts as a 12-year-old playing cricket without a box on. That had a lasting impact on my life. You want to understand how you get a voice like this? That's how you get a voice like this.
Shouldn't it be the opposite?
I thought it'd go the other way.
Yeah.
I know. Seriously.
No, seriously.
You got the voice for jazz.
This is the voice I ended up with almost immediately as a result of that incident. And everybody was laughing and giggling. And I was crying. I was laughing.
That hurts. Yes. I have a deep voice now.
Well, you know, my dad was a doctor. And of course, I went home walking like John Wayne and I was in absolute agony. And he sort of, you know, being a good doctor, he recognized there was a problem. And he said, you know, "What's happened, son?" And I told him and he said, "Well, let me have a look." And it wasn't nice. It wasn't a pleasant. I don't want to get into too many details.
Yeah,
but,
it's a family show.
Goldie, you and I have worked together for 20 years and I've never showed more restraint than I'm showing right now. For all the things that are coming to my mind that I want to say about that story. And I'm going to continue to show restraint and move on with the show. But just so you know, when we're off, I have many things to say to you.
I just threw up gently in my mouth.
There you go. Well, I won't finish the story then. I won't tell you what he made me do, which is to this day the most embarrassing thing I've ever done in my life. Anyway, moving on. Hit that bell quickly.
We got more stuff to talk about.
Yeah, well, I don't know why you hit the bell then.
We're still in the same segment. Let's go.
Okay. Mad Bum. Is that another obscenity? No. Bumgarner, the legend that is. A seven-inning no-no. But apparently it's not a no-no, JC, because it was only seven innings, even though it was a doubleheader, so it wasn't his fault. It was a designated game that lasted seven innings. And apparently you can pitch a complete game that is a seven-inning doubleheader, but they won't give you a no-no. This is nonsense, isn't it?
Travesty. This is absurd. Okay, I get it if there's a rain out and the game doesn't get completed. I understand all the naysayers saying, look, you know, if we ended Nolan Ryan's career at seven innings for all his games, he would have had 16 more no-hitters. Those last two innings are some of the hardest innings to work through to get to the no-hitter because you're facing fatigue, you're facing batters who have seen you numerous times, and there's more of a chance of losing it. But if Major League Baseball designates a game to be seven innings, and that is the official length of the game, and a pitcher throws a no-hitter in the official length of the game, they deserve the joy of throwing a no-hitter.
I 100% agree. And taking a parallel to that, if you win a fantasy title in 2 months rather than six, there's no asterisks, there's no it doesn't count. Okay, it's still the real deal. You can only beat what's in front of you.
Your nuts story was better than that.
One thing I want to talk about about Mad Bum, the whole scenario. A, first of all, I want to say that no, I don't think you should be giving a no-no for just seven innings. You'll never know.
Wow.
You should never get a complete game for just seven innings either. So there you go. It's a different.
So you know, you're talking counter to, you know, John Thorne is. John Thorne is the official historian of Major League Baseball. He thinks that you're full of okay, many okay. things.
He said it. He specifically said that Eric Jansen is. Yeah.
Now one.
He wrote me personally.
That, the one interesting thing about that doubleheader of two games with only seven innings was that only one hit was allowed in those two games. So, because the first hit was
by the Diamondbacks.
Correct.
Because it wasn't just one hit between the two teams. If you, it would be another day. It'd be impossible. There would be two no hitters. There was just one hit combined by both teams.
You know how baseball works, Eric.
All right. The Arizona Diamondbacks only allowed one hit in doing that entire doubleheader.
That's impressive.
Wow.
Yes, it is. It's stats almost, like that that I keep you going. Yes.
Almost as impressive as your handle on these stats. Moving on. Okay.
Okay, moving on.
It's the Badoo Watch, a view to Akil. Dear friend, thank you, Craig. What's happening to get Akil? Is it all going completely pear-shaped?
A view to Akil is, well, it's is good, Badoo, ugly.
Very good.
Okay, since since our last recording, Akil Badoo, who started off oh so strong when the season began, he's gone 1-13.
Oh.
Yeah, so it's too bad. Well, luckily for him that the minor leagues haven't started yet, because I think he'd be there by now.
Well, no, that's they could send him to the alternative site, right?
Because I guess, but
that sounds like doesn't that sound like purgatory? Like when I die and I go somewhere, wherever I go, they say we're sending you to the alternative site.
Yeah,
it's gonna be, you know, that's not gonna be good.
It's like that, like that island in Lost, you know, kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. It's the alternative
site. Can I also point
site.
Out that if he's gone 1-13, then he clearly only played 3-4 games. So he's obviously not even an everyday starter.
He's dropped one game, and also he yesterday, they put him in the 9th position in the batting lineup.
Oh, no.
But we're committed to him for the season. Even
we
if he's
are,
in Toledo.
Absolutely.
Now, what happens if he just gets released? We'll be like, you know, Akil is working at the local bank in his hometown. He had a great week. He had a great week.
He bought a muffin.
Employee of the week.
He bought a muffin with his coffee. By the way,
Let it not come to that for Akil.
One thing I want to say as well, because the Tigers were playing the Yankees yesterday, Miguel Cabrera, he's one hit shy of breaking tying Babe Ruth's for all-time hits, 26th on the list, and it'd be nice if he does in Yankee Stadium. But he went 0-for as well yesterday. So.
Okay.
So it's more bad news. You're the bearer of bad news, Eric. That's your new role on this podcast.
He is the Grim Reaper of facts.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
One more thing.
Okay, well, give us some good news about the Yerminator.
The Yerminator. There we go. That's a nice segue. As last week we mentioned that. The Yerman Mercedes has a burger named after him in Southside Chicago from Fabulous Freddy's, which is a Southside Chicago eatery. We posted it on social media before the blackout, of course, that he's actually tried his own burger finally, and he gave it the thumbs approval. And by the way, after he ate the Yerminator burger, he went 4-for-4, and he's now currently hitting .415. So it says a lot for nutrition in Major League Baseball. I say, screw you, vegans.
That is impressive. I once had to catch two ends of a doubleheader, and in between games, I went to In-N-Out Burger. Anyone who's been to California knows that that is considered one of the great burger eateries. Though there are differences of opinion, I understand that. But for me, it is the best. I had two double doubles. I was a young man then, and I sucked in the second game. It just absolutely took me out. So, you know, the Yerminator, more burger man than I could ever be.
JC, I don't know if you've seen the footage of him when they delivered the burgers to him, because obviously they want him to know that there's this burger named after him, and they delivered two, and he absolutely loved them, and his passing comment was, "I want four next time." So two wasn't enough for the big guy. He wanted four. So if he's going 4-for-4 on the back of two, what's he going to do? What's he going to do? Yeah, great. Grand slam. Fantastic. Right, that's great news. That's the news roundup. Eric, hit the bell. Thank you, buddy. We move on to our second batter, second pitch of the day. And this is with regards to our dear friend, David Lengel. I'm sure regular listeners will know that David is not with us for the second week on the bounce. I can tell you that he's in upstate New York on a much needed family vacation weekend retreat. But David did want to make a few noises and a contribution towards today's show. And obviously, we all know him to be a great New Yorker, a New York Met fan. And he's got some very interesting thoughts on the state of the Yankees.
All right, this is David's Two Cents. I want to talk a little bit about the Yankees, what the Yankees were, and what the Yankees are. We know what the Yankees were, 27 titles, always at the very center of Major League Baseball's universe, always at the top of the payroll list, always some kind of sizzle going around, the most famous franchise in all of Major League Baseball. Infamously dubbed the Evil Empire after beating out the Boston Red Sox for a Cuban free agent in 2003. Two decades later, this year, they're not evil anymore. Instead, they're just boring. The Yankees this year, let's be honest, are a buzz-free snooze fest. They don't bother anybody anymore. They have no identity. They have nothing going on whatsoever. They're desperate to kickstart any kind of restoration of their once glorious franchise. And that's one reason why 21 games into their season, they had 21 different lineups. You know, this is a team that always had something going on. You know, even if they weren't winning, they had something going on. But usually they were winning and winning with intrigue and storylines. Babe Ruth and Lou Gehrig going at it early on. The schism between Joe D and Mickey Mantle when DiMaggio was dethroned in center field. And then Steinbrenner came in, who was basically like having Donald Trump run your franchise for two or three decades or whatever it was. 1973 he came in, George Steinbrenner. And of course, endless storylines that go on and on. But now you have this ball club with, you know, you can talk to me about Aaron Judge, and you can talk to me about Stanton, and I guess you could even talk to me about Cole. You know, obviously these are good players, and, you know, winning helps, but none of these guys are lighting up Broadway. This team is a bore. There's nothing going on. They have no savvy. They even got rid of Reggie Jackson, who perhaps had the most savvy. I remember Reggie Jackson coming into the locker room in 2006, and the players were talking to the press, and he came in and said, "We suck tonight. Write that down." But, you know, such colorful incidents are nowhere near the Yankees now. Now you have Aaron Boone-led, dull as dishwater, faceless Yankees, not a decent quote in the house, no drama, no controversy, no A-Rod, no Jeter dating Mariah Carey, nothing. You just have a bunch of dull, overpaid, bored, and they're not winning the World Series. And why would I watch the Yankees when I can watch Otani, when I can watch Tatis, when I can watch the Dodgers and the Padres? Why would I want to watch these Yankees? I heard they were selling tickets the other day for $8 over there. I mean, they're desperate. They have absolutely nothing going on. And they're not beating anybody to win a World Series. This team's no good. Who's good? Judge, if you can keep him on the field, is okay. They've been mentioning him in trades. Stanton was good in the playoffs last year, but you don't know how long he's going to be healthy. Gerrit Cole is the ace, but what else is there? You're counting on Severino coming back. The bullpen's okay. This is the New York Yankees. This is supposed to be the sexiest franchise in baseball, along with the most glorious team in Major League Baseball. And they're boring as hell, man. The game has moved on from the Yankees. Everybody's trying to express themselves. And they're still shaving their faces, got to have that clean face, trying to be some bastion of clean-cut America. I don't know what the Yankees are anymore, but they're not the Yankees. And that's it. That's my two cents, my two pence.
Okay, well, that's typical Dave. He's not exactly holding back. What I take from that is that they are dull, dull, dull with a capital D. They've lost their edge. They've lost their aggression. They're not even particularly good. And there's no storyline. And as the most winning franchise in Major League Baseball, by quite some margin, baseball is the lesser because the Yankees are in decline. Do you agree, JC? Do you think Dave's on it?
So Dave had a lot there that needs to be unpacked. I think he's kind of off the rails. He goes to upstate New York, and he's lost a little bit of what is accurate here. A few points to make. First off, he talks about the halcyon days of the Yankees and sort of the interesting figures, whether it be Reggie Jackson or it be George Steinbrenner. That's just not baseball right now. So to say that this is a Yankees issue, that you don't have owners who are, you know, the Marge Schatz, who also was an interesting figure who owned the Cincinnati Reds, that you don't have those type of people anymore is a problem with baseball in general. I'm not saying it's a problem that we don't have Marge Schatz, but that we don't have sort of these very colorful owners, the Bill Vex of the world, the Charlie Finleys of the world. So that's not a Yankees issue. Same thing with the players. You know, my takeaway with the Yankees is this. If the Yankees were winning, they would be at the top of every news story. When the Yankees were winning with players who weren't particularly colorful, Derek Jeter was not particularly colorful. Mariano Rivera was not particularly colorful. Andy Pettit was not particularly colorful, but they were winners. And so people paid attention. If the Yankees were winning right now, it would be the team that we always think of as the Yankees. They would be the evil empire. Everyone would be paying attention. The stories would be big. And that's the reason why the Yankees are not appealing right now. It's just simply that they're not winning. And they still do have players who could have them winning. They're just not doing it right now.
I think what surprises me, though, when you consider that he makes the point they're no longer at the top of the payroll, and they're quite way off. I mean, the Dodgers are sizably in front of them on the payroll. They are still number two. And when you consider how much money they're spending, what surprises me, JC, is that they don't seem to be recruiting particularly well. I look at their lineup, and there are players there that I don't look upon as being superstars. I mean, even the so-called superstars, the likes of Judge and Stanton, who genuinely, when they're fit and healthy, are fabulous players to watch, but they can't stay on the pitch long enough to prove it. But they've got other guys in the lineup. I hate to say it. Clint Frazier, Aaron Hicks, they don't excite me. There's nothing about them that I'm like, wow, yeah, I've got to have him in my fantasy team. Having said that,
I mean, I like DJ LeMahieu. I think he's an absolute star. I think, you know, as a player. And you're right. I mean, the issue here is that you do have these stars that aren't living up to it. And I think that's the case, particularly with Stanton and Judge. And then they've really focused on pitching, understandably. They have an excellent bullpen. David made that point. You know, you still have Aroldis Chapman, and you have, you know, Zach Britton's healthy. You've got him, and you've got you got Chad Green. And then you've got, of course, Gerrit Cole. So there are a lot of stars. Maybe they're not all in the lineup. And that's, I think, one difference between this Yankees team, which is the Yankees always relied on great lineup, good to very good pitching. And now they were trying to flip that a little bit. But they were always going to be a wild card when you're worrying and hoping that guys like Corey Kluber are going to bounce back. So they made some choices. They've been bad choices right now. I don't think the Yankees are a team that, over a year or two from now, are not going to be in the conversation, because you're right. They're not the highest payroll team, but they're near the top. They're always going to be, and they're always going to put down the money to try and win championships.
Okay, well, to round this off, I do agree with Dave that they lack swagger, and they've had swagger in the past. They've had aggression. They were nasty. You know, Roger Clemens and the run-in with Mike Piazza in that great World Series matchup when they, you know, the broken bat. I mean, that was the sort of edge that I think they need, and they don't seem to have it. So I think that point is a well-made point. They need to get back to being the nasty, evil empire. But that's another story. Right, let's move on. Eric,
Before ring the bell, please. One more thing I wanted to address about the Yankees as well is that you know, Reggie Jackson has now severed ties with the Yankees organization, allegedly, and he's now with the Houston Astros, helping out the Houston Astros, the front office and management and whatnot, which will be interesting when the Astros revisit Yankee Stadium with, and then people will see Reggie Jackson, you know, helping out the Astros, and which is weird to say because, like, you know, as David alluded to, that. Yeah, they've lost, you know, there's no characters of the game. Aaron Judge is now could be used as trade bait? Question mark? We'll see. Moving on.
Okay, we move on to this is an issue that just doesn't seem to want to go away. We've referenced the Astros, we've referenced AJ Hinch earlier on today during the show, and we're back with supposed accusations of sign stealing. First of all, Nick Madrigal of the White Sox accusing Miggy Cabrera, who you mentioned earlier, Eric, was supposedly stealing signs for second base. And there's a question mark as well about Tatis Jr. Having a little cheeky peek. What's the story, boys?
Well, I'll start with the cheeky peek because I have a personal story on it. So Tatis, you look back, allegedly, I've seen it, it's hard to conclude, and he's claiming that he didn't. But he looked back to try and sneak a peek of the catcher signals in a game in order to get the advantage as to knowing what pitcher is coming. The other story is a little more convoluted. It is tremendous common practice going back decades that if a runner is on second base, that they may try to signal to the batter either positioning for the catcher or what the pitch is that's coming. Harder to do that with the pitch that's coming. You're taught as a catcher and a pitcher to have a series of signals that are hard to decipher so that that can't be done. A little easier if the catcher sets up early. One thing you're taught as a catcher, don't move to the position where you're going to set up your glove until the absolute last minute to avoid that. So this is not something that's new. What was interesting was that Cabrera took offense from Madrigal claiming that that Cabrera was doing that. If he was, it is very common in the game. So it's interesting that he was uncomfortable with it. As for the sneaky peek, I have just a personal story to tell about that real quickly, which was I actually did that once by mistake when I was a player. In the 2001 European Championships, I was just looking back because they were going through a series of signals, and I was looking back just to see what was going on. And I happened to catch the signal of the catcher. We were playing Sweden when I was playing for Great Britain, that it was going to be a slider. So, you know, usually the signals are pretty, if you see the signal, you know, one's a fastball, two's a curve, three's a slider. So I knew a slider was coming. I hit a ground rule double off the pitch knowing that it was coming. So it was a tremendous advantage. Fast forward to the following year, we were playing a series of friendlies against Sweden. And I got to be honest, man, it was so great to hit that ground rule double. It was the same catcher, different pitcher. And I actually did try and look back, and I got caught. And the catcher got up, and he wanted to brawl over it. He was pissed. And I just owned it. I said, man, I am so sorry. It was my moment. I regret it for my whole life. And I know the catcher. I got to know him because I ended up playing professionally in Sweden. It never came up again. But that's a real – the bottom line is that's a really, really silly thing to do. Just so if Tatis did it, hopefully he's learned his lesson. And he will not do that again.
Do you think he did? Because, I mean, he's been defended that, you know, players and manager alike have said, you know, that's just not who he is. He didn't do it. So, but you get the sense from what you've seen that perhaps he did take a sneaky peek?
Look, I was a person who always played by the rules, and I once tried to do it. We have our moments where we kind of, you know, you make a mistake. I wouldn't be surprised. It's a hard thing to get away with. That's why people don't do it more often, because it's really hard to turn your head and not get caught looking if you're going to try to do it. Because that's one thing you do as a catcher. So you have one glove by your leg so that the third base coach can't see things. You try and make sure that you're angled so the coaches can't see things. And while you're giving the signs, you often look up at the hitter. I did, to make sure that that wasn't going to happen. So it's not something you get away with. But I could see it happening. You have that those moments of bad judgment, and I had one. So if I can have one, and Tatis could have one.
Do you know what we haven't referenced, guys, is which game this happened in? Because, of course, it was the massive rivalry that's developing between the Dodgers and the Padres. And it was actually he hit a second home run off Trevor Bauer. He'd already hit him for one. And Bauer's come out afterwards, because obviously they are suggesting, and that's what he did, and said that's the type of stuff that would get you hit in other games. And he was talking about Tatis's alleged sign stealing. And he goes on to say, now I'm mild-mannered about it. Flip the bat, do all that stuff, fine. But if you're going to look at the signs, not okay. And if you do it again, the team that you're playing probably isn't going to take too kindly to it. And there might have to be some on-field stuff. So this is a wonderful rivalry already. This is just surely adding fire to the flames.
I mean, if you know what's coming, Goldie, it does make a difference. Anyone who tells you anything differently is complete full of bunk. The issue, of course, is going back to the runner on second base and giving signs. I only want to know what the sign is if I'm 100% certain.
Yeah.
Right. So if someone on second base is, I never wanted them to flash me signs, because if they got it wrong and I'm thinking one pitch and it's something else,
yeah,
then you're screwed. So the difference between peeking back is that really those signs, you know, a fastball, curveball, the slider, the changeup, which is wiggling the fingers, those are universal. So if you catch it, you're 100% certain that is difference making. So the two situations are quite different as a result.
And I have to say, Eric, this is this whole issue has been quite it's been quite a sort of heated debate throughout this week, because of course AJ Finch, now your Detroit Tigers manager, who was of course fired from his job as manager of the Houston Astros as a result of their of trash can gate back in 2017-18-19, and obviously I think the Tigers were playing the Astros this week. They were also back in New York, so there was a lot of issues there, because of course the Astros knocked the Yankees out of, I think it was both the 2017 and 2019 American League Championship Series. So, I quite like what I've heard from AJ Hinch in terms of how he's taken ownership and seems genuinely repentant.
Absolutely. No, and that's the thing. The Tigers currently this weekend are in Yankee Stadium with AJ Hinch at the helm. And he's, you know, he's being booed and heckled. And of course, I think the Yankees fans got out of the system game one, but I doubt that. I'm sure there'll be more heckling the next two games in this three-game series. But yeah, he has moved on. He served his suspension. He's admitted wrongdoing, and it's time to move on. And God forbid, imagine if the Tigers start doing some sign stealing, and lightning will never strike twice with AJ Hinch. So I think he's the most trustworthy manager around that will never be caught, you know, being implicated with sign stealing.
But this is different though, Eric. Like, I think if Cabrera was even doing that, that's part of the game. You know, I think the issue with the Astros was the technology. It was not the on-field. Everyone knows that you're going to try and steal signs. You got to be smarter than that. It's a totally different ball game.
Exactly. And of course, AJ Hinch had nothing to do with what, you know, he can't control what Miguel Cabrera sees standing on second base, you know, so it's...
But this is the issue, isn't it? That this is part of the game. This is the history of the game. But that one's okay, but the other one isn't. It's a sort of, the technology is the difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's doing off-field stuff that isn't in the heat of the game, right? I mean, part of stealing signs is in the heat of the game. There's a lot to it. But if you're, you know, having a camera in the outfield and having things that are done off the field to get that sort of certainty, to me, there's a line, and that crosses the line. Now, I think you could easily make an argument that it's all bad, right? We need to have a line that's sort of shifted towards any of this type of malfeasance, the skullduggery. I don't know. I think it's fun to move that line a little bit and allow for a little bit of that espionage, a subterfuge.
And one more thing I'll say before I ring that bell is that, and I've said this before on this show, And I'll try to word it nice and clean, because we are a family show. Stealing signs is like playing with yourself. Nothing wrong with it unless you get caught.
Oh, my God.
Right, we're into the seventh inning stretch. Big guy, Eric,
and
all yours.
Can I just say, so far so good. I still have a fresh waffle to eat. We haven't been using the waffle that much today yet.
The only waffler's been you, Eric. So you can't keep waffle
well,
yourself.
I couldn't exactly.
Can you self waffle?
I can't exactly. Please, it's a family show.
Self waffle.
Yes, that sounds obscene, Johnny. Baseball book of the week, which is it will consist of, you know, we've been talking fastballs and curveballs. I mean, of course, a few shows ago, I presented you the book, The Knuckle Book, which is a book all based about the knuckleball, the history of the knuckleball, its mechanics, and what it means to Major League Baseball. And then I perused my shelf, and I forgot I had this book, which is High Heat by Tim Wendell. And it's about the history of the fastball. Now you think, well, how can you write a whole book about the fastball? Well, you can, if your name is Tim Wendell. And it's basically the search for the fastball, and you know how it evolved, and why should the fastball be in the repertoire of every single pitcher? Some don't if you're a knuckleballer, but is it important in this day and age that the ball now has to hit the 100, you know, three, at least three digits on the radar gun? And it shouldn't now. Already, this book is 10 years old. I think it's already beginning to feel out of date, because we are actually seeing the fastball going faster and faster and faster. Like now 95 is normal. 90, if we ever saw 98 on a radar gun 20 years ago, we go, oh my God. And everyone, the whole world rejoiced when Nolan Ryan got 101 one year. Now 101, you see it every, at least once a game. But I will actually defer to Josh now, because it should the fastball be in the repertoire of every single pitcher? If you don't have that in your repertoire, do you, you know, are you not technically a good pitcher?
Well, I mean, I think it's inevitable, right? Because every kid, that's the first thing you learn. You be too much on the elbow and the arm to start by throwing, you know, curveballs and cutters to start with. So I think every pitcher, by definition of the process of getting there, will have it. Is this as important today as it was then? I think ironically, no, even though pitchers can throw up to 105 miles an hour. And the reason for that is that hitters have gotten attuned to high speed. And in order to get to the majors now, the sort of baseline is to be able to hit at that level and to hit that speed. And I was watching a game cast of the Padres game yesterday with Yu Darvish on the mound, who's one of the best pitchers in baseball. He probably threw his four seam 94 mile an hour fastball half a dozen times in the game. He was throwing in the 80s and 90 to like 81 throughout most of the game, but he was throwing with movement. And that's really the two factors that makes great pitching right now is the ability. Well, the three. One is obviously placement, you know, to be able to have that command to throw it in different parts of the strike zone. The second is movement. Are you getting enough movement? Is that movement late? Because that's a huge part of it. And the third is differentiation of speed. It's not that you throw 105. It's can you throw 105 and then throw an 85 mile an hour pitch for a strike? So those guys who can just throw heat, that they're not that valuable as much as the players who can do the other three things much better than the velocity.
That's true. No, I'm with you. And it's I still recommend high heat, Tim Wendell, because it's still it's already beginning to feel like, is it an archive historical look at the fastball? No, it's still pertinent today. Moving on, baseball and pop culture and cinema. And I sort of alluded to last week, of course, who does not love Naked Gun? You know, we talked about Airplane. We've talked now, and we slightly talked about Naked Gun, but I have to readdress it because there's more behind the scenes stuff about that baseball moment in Naked Gun when Frank Drebin goes to a baseball game, which is between the Angels and the Mariners, and Queen Elizabeth II is in attendance, of course, as we all remember. The thing about it, the interesting thing is the genius that is Zucker and Abrams, who made the Naked Gun series and Airplane and Police Squad, they wanted the Dodgers to be part of it, but then they had to go through Major League Baseball licensing, and they had to say, well, okay, which teams can we actually, you know, we want proper MLB teams in the scene in the films. And Major League Baseball said, you can have the Mariners, but you can't have the Dodgers. The Dodgers says, we don't want to be involved. You can't show the Dodgers logo on the film, so you leave us out of this. And the compromise was, well, we're in LA. We want to, you know, you don't want to travel somewhere else. And then the Angels said, over here, we'll do it. We'll be part of it. So that's why it was Angels and Mariners. And because Major League Baseball decided Mariners need more marketing. They're such a lowly team. Can you just give them a little boost, give them a little... So that's why the Mariners were chosen, but it was shot in Dodger Stadium. They allowed Dodger Stadium to be used as a setting, but the Dodgers says, "Do not show any Dodgers logo." You know, it's like it's try to make sure that it doesn't look like Dodger Stadium, even though you can tell in certain angles. And the Dodgers wouldn't let Vin Scully wanted to be in the film because he loved Airplane so much, and the Dodgers wouldn't allow Vin Scully to appear in the film. That's where you had Jim Palmer and Dick Enberg and Mel Allen was in that, and they were the commentators in that scene.
This is the problem with like the protecting the brand, you know, that we have this magical historical brand, and you know, this is some sort of silly movie, and could this somehow diminish our brand? There are just some people in front offices who don't think more holistically about the value of baseball and the value about being part of pop culture. And this is one of the criticisms of baseball, right? That they need to embrace pop culture for better or for worse, whenever they
have. Very true. And here's the thing, the case in point, Jim Palmer, who's, you know, the Hall of Famer of a Baltimore Orioles legend, over 300 wins. He said to this day, people approach him and they don't say, "Hey, Jim Palmer, strikeout legend, Baltimore Orioles." No, they go, "Hey, weren't you a Naked Gun?" to this day. You know, he and that's how pop culture and baseball
more famous for that.
Yeah,
yeah. It's OJ's best film.
Yeah, absolutely.
True. And all credit better than Towering Inferno.
And all credit of Vince Scully for wanting to be in it. So at least he knew what he was doing.
He was upset that he was not in Naked Gun. He actually said that. So.
Vince Scully is more than a national treasure. He is an international treasure. That man is the best.
And I understand how he feels. I'm gutted that I was edited out of Sheena, Queen of the Jungle. But that's another story.
Ding! We got our podcast reference.
Right, triv answer. Come on, Eric. We need a trivial answer.
Earlier, I asked you about Joey Votto. You know, now he's now joined the 300 Club. In Major League Baseball, in the 300 Club with the Cincinnati Reds, because he's been a Red his whole life, but he does not hold the franchise record for most home runs. I asked you which of these three players do hold the Cincinnati Reds franchise records for most career home runs. Is it A, Ken Griffey Jr., or is it B, Johnny Bench, or is it C, Frank Robinson? All three, of course, who are in the Hall of Fame.
Let's work through this, right? So the issue with Griffey Jr. is he spent, a small portion of his career with the Reds, even though he hit the most home runs of the three of them. So I'm going to put him out. The issue with Frank Robinson, who hit over 500 home runs, is obviously he played with other teams as well, too. The Reds were only a partial portion of his career. But he was good with the Reds. You know, he was great with the Orioles, too. The thing about Bench, probably the least amount of career home runs, I think, certainly, but his whole career was with them. Yeah. So that leaves me with a, I don't know, but I'm probably going to go with Bench only because he played his whole career with them, even though he had by far the fewest home runs of the three.
I'm going to go with Ken Griffey Jr. for no reason other than the fact that I love him.
David will be going with Frank Robinson.
Put us out of our misery, Eric. Who's the winner?
Yeah.
In no particular order, Frank Robinson, 324.
Whoa.
Johnny Bench, 389.
Ooh.
Ken Griffey Jr., 210.
Yes.
So I'm lost. You were absolutely right. Didn't play that long.
More home runs.
I thought that went through, Goldie. Did you hear that? I had like reasonings and all that stuff.
I know, and I just didn't want to agree. I didn't want to believe in you.
One more thing. Canadians who have hit home runs, who has a record for most home runs as a Canadian player? Can you?
As a Canadian. Well, they pretended to be a Canadian.
No. Larry Walker.
Larry Walker is with 383 most home runs by a Canadian. And I think
you heard I was going there, Goldie.
Yeah, like
picked
on the
it
first.
Up, didn't you? I said the Larry, and then you said Larry Walker.
He didn't weep.
You need a win. I know you need a win, Goldie.
The only two Canadians who I think could beat Larry Walker's record for most as a Canadian would be either Vlad Guerrero Jr. Yes, he's Canadian, thank you. Born in Montreal. Or Freddie Freeman. Yes, he's Canadian, born in California, but two Canadian parents with a Canadian passport. There you go.
No.
Yes.
Okay.
So, but are Larry Walker's home runs a little like Canadian currency? It's a little inflated because Walker hit so many in Colorado.
Coors Field. I know. That's the thing.
Okay. Well, the door's been shut on the mailbag because it's a social media blackout. But the one thing that I want to mention with regards to the mailbag this week is, of course, the beginning of the British baseball season.
I could not be more well chuffed about this fact, Goldie. There's so many people who love playing the game in the UK who all through last year had to sit on the bench effectively. There was a tournament that was played, but no full season, and it was really limited. And there are so many teams starting up and so many people who are embracing baseball in the UK that are going to get the opportunity starting this week to play the game that it puts such a smile on my face. And one thing in particular is that we're seeing the women's game in the UK growing at such a really impressive rate. I got an opportunity to get on a Zoom call with Bell's Baseball, one of the teams, to talk about catching during the offseason. That's how committed they are. They're getting on Zoom calls. They were having regular meetings to work on their game. And I'm so excited for the future of women's baseball in Great Britain. I feel that our country can be a real leader in this area. And it all starts this weekend. So I hope for everyone out there who's playing, I hope you guys have a great season. I had so many great years where I got to play on the various fields in the UK. It's a wonderful thing. So, yay.
Buddy, can I ask you, where's that team based that you had your Zoom call with?
Well, they're the Southern Bells. I would think possibly Bracknell, only because I know Jessica Vernon's one of the players. Paul Vernon is playing there. They may be playing at Farnham, though. Right. To be quite honest, don't know what their home field is. So I'm sure they will tell us.
I'm sure you've heard of the podcast Birds with Balls, because one of the three girls that is the presenters of that podcast is Tracy Wilkes, and she's taking part in our Rookie League, the Behind Home Plate podcast Rookie League that James and I have set up. And she and I are going head-to-head this very week. And I know she's got a strong affiliation. Certainly her two co-presenters have a strong affiliation with a new ball club that's starting down in Bristol. So down my part of the world. So I've promised them I'm going to go and have a look and cheer them on as my local team. So yeah, I get the impression too that there's a real explosion, and long may it continue.
And can I also give a shout out to the home plate bar in Farnham Park, which is the catering facilities. Hey, I'm just fishing for a free burger or free coffee.
And that's different from when?
Yes. Hello, Sarah, from the Home Plate Bar in Farnham Park in Slough. So.
Can I ask you an honest question, Eric? If they create a burger and they name it after you, will that be literally job done, life lived? I could go to my grave a happy and proud man.
I can die happy with cholesterol, yes.
I'm starting to think I'm amazed that hasn't occurred yet. I mean, I know you're not really famous, Eric, but in a small circle, I would hope that someone out there would we call it the Eric the Producer Burger, right? We wouldn't call it like the Jansen Burger. That would be.
We'll figure something out.
I'll come up with a name, right? Names.
Hey, we'll run a conversation.
We should ask the listeners, come up with the perfect burger name for the producer.
Or ribs, or hot dogs, or any meat product.
Anything with cholesterol.
He'd even take coleslaw.
Coleslaw. Yeah, no, I think coleslaw is a must on the side. Yes, on the side.
It. The Jansen Jammy Burger. I'm loving it. Loving it. Okay. Well, look, if you do want to get in touch with us, we'd love to hear from you as always. We're on Facebook, The Johnny and Josh Show. We're on Twitter, at Johnny and Josh. We do want to hear from you. We need you to be a part of the program, as has always been the case. Don't forget that we have other social handles. We've got other podcasts, which would be lovely to watch and listen. Behind Home Plate, at BHP Pod. That's our fancy baseball podcast with James Holden, the legend. Fancy baseball player, and I'm there just to keep him in check. We've got Slapshot Smack Talk with our very own Eric, and that is at Slapshot Talk on Twitter, and of course the Nat Coombs Show, which is at the NC Show, talking all things American sport, and in particular NFL. Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, we do it all.
This is the bit where you point, Johnny. You point again. You see?
Oh, I have to point.
I think it's there, or is it there?
Do I do this every week?
Yes, because we want people to click that button. Here's what we're going to do. We're going to give you guys 3 seconds.
I feel a bit weird.
3 seconds to just take your time and just click like right there and subscribe right there. Or is it there? I'll figure it out. There's a subscribe button right there, and there's a click button right there. Please click. It means a lot to us.
It does mean a lot if you say that you like us, because we're all very short in the love department at the moment, and we need all the reassurance that we can get. Isn't that right, Josh?
The depth of our insecurity knows no bounds.
Boys, as always, it's a sadness to have to say we've run out of time. That is it for this week. Thank you so much for your company.
Goldie, it is always a pleasure to spend a little time, even when you're in Bahrain.
I know, sunny Bahrain. Can you believe that? Three of us separated by how many thousands of miles? 12,000 miles?
It's probably more now because you're in a different time zone now, because you're 11, I don't know. It's like it's all...
That's right. I'm 2 hours ahead of the UK instead of three. I'm getting a little bit closer. I'm swimming my way home. But hopefully I will be home for next week's show, so we shouldn't have any IT problems. Boys, thank you so much. As always, fingers crossed, Big Dave will be back as well. A massive thanks to everybody for listening. This has been The Johnny and Josh Show, Episode 6. Till next time, stay safe, stay well. Look forward to seeing your company, even having your company, next time on The Johnny and Josh Show.